This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon and welcome to the show. I am Meera Sevasodhi. Mention the words radioactive substance and you probably think it's going to harm you. But what if these substances, when administered properly, can in fact treat you? And that's what we refer to as nuclear medicine. In the studio with me, Dr. Yogendran Lechumanasamy, a nuclear medicine physician. We're going to be trying to explore exactly what this avenue for diagnosis and treatment is. Welcome to the show, Dr. Yogendran. How are you today?
Good, Meera. Thank you very much.
Could you explain to me very quickly what nuclear medicine really is?
Okay, nuclear medicine is a medical specialty using radioactive agents to diagnose or to treat diseases. Most people would have heard about CT scan, and not many people would have heard about PET CT. In radiology, say, i.e. CT scan, the radiation comes from the machine. In nuclear medicine, the radiation comes from the patient because we get the patient to either drink, inhale, or inject the patient with a radioactive agent, and we look at the amount of radioactivity coming out of the patient.
Okay, so at this stage, I'm trying not to panic because, you know, when you say nuclear medicine and then you inject us with this nuclear substance, okay, a patient is injected with what you call radioisotope.
Yes.
And that emits gamma rays. Now, is this safe or not? Or how different is this from all the other nuclear stuff that we hear about?
You won't turn into Spider-Man or Spider-Woman.
I hope not. Or radiate.
Not that I have seen.
Or just radiate nuclear power, you know.
Okay. The fear comes from large amounts of radioactivity when you've heard of disasters. So that level of radioactivity will give you some side effects, some, maybe you can call it deadly effects. But the amount of radioactivity that we use is very minuscule compared to what you fear most. So we either inject or get the patient to drink or inhale very, very little radioactive, the dosage of radioactivity. So it is not going to harm you. It's actually, when you look at the risk-benefit ratio, risk hardly anything, benefit, yes, a lot.
Because when you talk about nuclear technology, we often, you know, link that to causing cancer.
Yes.
And so, you know, hence the anxiety when you say nuclear medicine.
Yeah, I understand. A lot of my patients ask the same question.
And what made you want to train to be a nuclear medicine physician?
Difficult question to answer. I never thought of nuclear medicine. I thought of multiple other specialties, and suddenly my boss at that time just called me and I said, hey, apply for this.
And
that's
so
how I
you
got
did.
It. Yes.
Okay, and what do you enjoy most as a nuclear medicine physician?
Okay, when you are in the wards, in the hospital, you have a lot of patient interaction. And when you go to certain departments, there is always either computers or slides. Nuclear medicine is more encompassing. You have patient interaction, you have looking at, not slides, looking at images. And it's a bit of both. We diagnose, we treat, we see patients, we look at computers. So, very good.
Okay, fantastic. And you're not what we refer to as a technologist.
No.
A technologist would actually carry out the process of diagnosis?
Yes. It's the same difference between a radiologist and a radiographer, where radiologists will actually look at the images, speak to the patients. A radiographer actually handles the machine. So a nuclear medicine physician speaks to the patients, treats the patients, explains the entire procedure, diagnoses, reports the scan. A nuclear medicine technologist will handle the machine and carry out the procedure.
Okay, so you are doing more than a radiologist, actually. You are dealing with the patient as well.
A radiologist handles the patients as well. We all have our different methods. So I wouldn't say that one is more important than the other. One has more interactions than the other. It depends. When we are treating the patient, yes. And even in radiology, they have different types of radiologists. Interventional, there's a lot of subdivision there. So with nuclear medicine as well, there are a lot of subdivisions. But it's a very specialized field. So it's better to do everything rather than get into a specific thing.
Okay, a special area of expertise.
Yes.
So is nuclear medicine, the application of nuclear medicine, is it almost always for cancer treatment and diagnosis?
We can divide nuclear medicine into oncology and non-oncology users. A lot of people only know about oncology, but there are certain non-oncological users. For instance, we pinpoint the possible area where epilepsy starts in the brain. We look at the area of reduced uptake in the brain, and depending on the clinical situation, it could be epilepsy, or in older age group, they have signs and symptoms of dementia. We can diagnose that too.
Okay, so not just in the oncology.
No, even in cardiac, we can differentiate between myocardial ischemia and infarct.
Okay, so for cancer, you diagnose and you treat, right?
Yes. I mean,
so what you're describing is mostly very much imaging sort of thing, where you get to see what's happening in the brain. So
yes.
In terms of treatment, how does nuclear medicine help and how does it work?
We don't treat all cases. Okay, I'll give you an example, thyroid cancers. There are about five different types of cancers of the thyroid, and basically we call it differentiated or undifferentiated. Differentiated thyroid cancers, there are two types, follicular and papillary. They retain the same architectural structure of a normal thyroid. So these differentiated thyroid cancers will take up iodine. So we give the patient radioactive iodine after the patient has undergone thyroidectomy.
And what does that do after?
Patient with thyroid cancer, first step, thyroidectomy. Next, they will come to us to eradicate whatever else thyroid tissue that they have. So after that, we follow them up long term and see whether they are having a recurrence or they are stable.
Okay, so first you remove the thyroid and then you try to get rid of it. And is that the same application as chemotherapy, for an example?
No. Iodine is what a person takes in physiologically. Chemotherapy is a foreign agent. They both have their uses. I'm not saying one is better than the other. It depends on specifications of that particular disease as such. The thyroid gland will take up iodine. So we use that principle to treat thyroid cancers by making the iodine radioactive. Now, the thyroid gland cannot differentiate between radioactive iodine and non-radioactive iodine. As long as there is iodine in the body, it will absorb it. So what we do is we make the iodine radioactive, thyroid gland takes it up, and it's like a kamikaze thing. It
right.
just kills itself.
Okay, and the thyroid in particular is very sensitive to iodine.
Yes.
Compared to the other parts of the
compared
body.
Compared to the other parts of the body, it'll just absorb most of the iodine in the bloodstream.
Okay, and what if you are allergic to iodine? Then what happens? How do you treat somebody with thyroid cancer?
A very, very good question. Very rarely I've heard people asking me that question. In radiology, they give iodine-based contrast. So that question is very important to ask whether they're allergic to seafood or not, because seafood contains a lot of iodine. Whereas for us, we don't ask the patients whether they're allergic to seafood or not, or whether they're allergic to iodine, because the amount of elemental iodine contained in what we give is very, very little. But the amount of radioactivity contained in that little elemental iodine is a lot. So that amount of elemental iodine that we give is not enough to trigger off an allergic reaction, but is enough to eradicate whatever else thyroid tissue or metastatic thyroid tissue from that area.
That's very interesting. So iodine is used, it works well or in combination with radioisotopes?
Radioactive iodine is considered radioisotope by its own.
Okay, all right. So it obviously works well with iodine more than anything else.
We just change the form of iodine from stable to radioactive form.
Okay, so fantastic. Okay, so a lot of work has been done in thyroid cancers then, I'm assuming,
yes.
In terms of treatment. That's fantastic. Is it very successful?
Yes.
As you said, like a kamikaze, just wipes it out.
Yes.
You make it sound so simple, Dr. Yogendran.
It is very simple. It's just that the name accorded to us, nuclear medicine, or some people call it molecular imaging, or some people call it theranostics, they sound very bombastic and futuristic, but what we do is very simple. Once you get to know us and get to know what we do, then you realize that, you know, this is simple everyday stuff.
Once again, you make it sound so simple. I'm just very curious. I have just one question before I leave the thyroid cancer. Why do you need to do a thyroidectomy? Can't you just send in the iodine to wipe it out while the thyroid is still there?
Okay, the thyroid is a large organ in the neck. And if you give the patient radioactive iodine, it is going to absorb a lot of this radioactivity. And you don't need that amount of radioactivity to be given to that patient. So the best thing to do is send the patient for thyroidectomy and eradicate whatever else that is remaining there rather than give them large doses.
Okay, fair enough. We're discussing nuclear medicine and its applications with Dr. Yogendran Lechumanasamy. When we come back, we want to find out who decides whether or not you should go down the path of nuclear medicine, or whether you should do a CT scan, or should you embark on chemotherapy? I mean, I know Dr. Yogendran has actually told us that they're two very different modalities, but who decides or makes this decision? We'll find out up next on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89. Good afternoon and welcome to the show. In our Health and Living segment today, Dr. Yogendran Lechumanasamy, a nuclear medicine physician, speaking to us about nuclear medicine and what it's all about. Now, earlier on, I think he's sort of explained to us the applications of nuclear medicine in diagnosis and treatment in some oncology and some non-oncology applications, thyroid cancers being, you know, one very interesting one. As you mentioned, epilepsy being the other, and as well as in heart conditions as well.
Yes.
So who decides, Dr. Yogendran, who decides whether a patient should go down the nuclear medicine path or, you know, any other alternatives when it comes to diagnosis and treatment?
The primary physician. So the primary physician is actually looking at the patient and they have a lot of other information handy. They know what the person is complaining of, the symptoms, and they will do a medical examination, the signs, and then they will do various tests. They could be blood tests, they could be x-rays, they could be ultrasounds. And once you get to the correct diagnosis, you might want some other information. Or before you come to the diagnosis, you might want specific information to arrive at a diagnosis. So we can actually help in diagnosing or looking at the response of therapy. So whatever that the primary physician has in mind, the clinical question. So that will have to be answered and they will decide which modality to choose from.
Why doesn't it just become a modality for diagnosis in general when it comes to oncology?
Let's put it this way. You want to go to Penang. You can either take the train, you can take a car, you can take a flight. Which is the best way for you at that point in time? You want to get there faster? You take a flight. You want to stop in between and be comfortable, you take the car. But not so simple as that. You want a specific question answered. And for you to get the absolute answer, everything that you want to know, you need to choose specific modalities.
And nuclear medicine being one of it.
Yes.
Okay. There's often this misconception or people don't quite understand between a PET CT and a CT scan. What is the difference?
Okay. The CT, you are looking at the structure, the anatomy of it. And PET CT, you are looking at the function and anatomy. PET, we are basically looking at function. And it's a hybrid imaging. Hybrid, you've heard of hybrid cars. So PET is combined with CT, so you're looking at function and anatomy. Let's put it this way. You go to the car park and you see a car there. You do not know whether the car can be used, whether it'll move. But when you look at the fact that it's moving, the engine is on, you know that the car is working. So PET CT is something like, you see the car is moving. CT scan, the car is stationary.
Right.
Okay. They have their good, each of them.
Okay. And when you see PET CT, you're talking about nuclear medicine.
Yes.
Okay. So it sees function, not just structures.
They see both.
Both. Okay. As opposed to CT scans.
Yes.
So from start to end, when a patient walks into your center, what can he or she expect?
The actual beginning is before the patient walks into the center. When the referring physician requests for let's say, PET CT, we will get the request form and one of our staff will call the patient or the patient comes to get an appointment and they will be told the do's and don'ts, when to come. They should be fasted. They should come at a particular time, and who to come with or who not to come with. And once this is sorted out, they will be given an appointment. And when the day they come for an appointment, they will come and register. They will be told again, sort of a reinforcement, what needs to be done, the procedure of the test. So then they will be injected with a radioactive agent called F-18-FDG. And they have to wait for 60 minutes.
Why is that? Why do you need to wait?
Okay, when we inject something into the body, it is into the bloodstream. So you need to go, you need that material to go to the place of suspicion. And when, if they don't wait, like an X-ray, you can actually go there, get an X-ray and done, finished. But these scans, you need to wait for an uptake time and clearance time. So it takes that duration of time for that radioactivity to be concentrated where you want it to be concentrated and the rest to be excreted out via the kidneys. So the image is very much clearer.
Do people have reactions once you inject them? I mean, I'm thinking along the lines of a dye during an angioplasty, for
example. It is not a dye. It is actually radioactive glucose analog. It is something like glucose. It is, for all intents and purposes, fluorodeoxyglucose is glucose. So you don't get reactions unless you get reactions eating bread, rice.
So very natural sources.
Yes.
As opposed to the others.
So we take something simple as that and we make it radioactive. And the principle behind it is any cancer will use up, most cancers, will use up more glucose, more energy. So the FDG part of it will concentrate at the area of malignancy. And the F-18 will give out radioactivity, which we will look at and we will diagnose it then.
Where does this therapeutic radiopharmaceuticals come from?
We buy them. F-18 comes from, is cyclotron produced. It's something like a mini generator. And we tag it with the glucose.
Okay. And that's done within your center or?
Yes, it's done within the center.
And how long does the radioactivity stay in your system?
Each radioactive agent has got a specific half-life. And that is why the topic of today get a half-life. Each radioactivity has got what we call a half-life, meaning if you leave it out in the open, at a specific point in time, it'll become half its strength. So let's say when you take FDG, the half-life is 110 minutes. So even if you don't do anything with it, you leave it on the table in half, in exactly 110 minutes, it'll be half that amount of radioactivity. So in 10 half-lives of any agent, it is considered background radioactivity. So from the time that we inject, in roughly almost 20 hours, the patient is not classified as emitting radioactivity anymore.
And where do they go on and, you know, lead normal lives while this is happening? Or do they have to be, you know, admitted in hospital for the 20
hours? Oh, they lead normal lives
hours?
Even when this is happening. There's nothing abnormal about it.
So for the 20 hours, you just go home?
When we inject, let's say the patient is injected at 10 a.m.
Okay.
Okay, so they have to wait until 11 a.m. for the scan to finish. So by 12, they are probably, or maybe by 1, they are released from the hospital. They go home and they are told to keep away from the others for the duration to make that 20 hours. And if they can't do that, at least get the distance between them and the next person as 3 feet at least.
Okay. And what are the risks involved in a procedure like this?
None.
Absolutely none?
None.
Wow. Okay. I'm very impressed. is there a limit as to the amount of radiation that one is given during that period of time?
Every procedure carries a certain amount of radioactivity to be given. Okay, and this is calculated on body weight. And the amount of radioactivity given will give us the best possible images. And none of the level, the dosage that we give, will give any side effects or any adverse effects to the patient. They are just designed to be optimum to give the best possible image. So there's no adverse effects there.
Okay. And so just to make it clear, What would be the alternatives to nuclear medicine?
That's a difficult question to answer, because when you're talking about alternatives, you are saying that there are many different types, ways of diagnosing certain things. Okay, the alternative I would think of is, if in a place that you don't have nuclear medicine and you're not able to get these investigations, you do an alternate method of investigation. But you got to remember, when a physician, a doctor, requests for a specific investigation, they have got a specific clinical question in mind, and they want that thing answered. So if you are going for alternatives, you might not get a complete answer. You might get 80%, yes. If that is acceptable, then yes.
Okay, more like the story is not complete.
Yes.
And so do you see mostly oncological cases, or do you see a mix?
It is a mixed, but with a majority of oncology cases, because a lot of people don't know that there can be non-oncology cases. And of the non-oncology cases, majority are to look at cardiac muscles, the amount of blood that goes to the cardiac muscles, because we inject something that it's a very complicated thing, but we are looking at whether the person has got reduced blood going to the cardiac muscles, or that area is infarcted. And the new things that we have got is looking at epilepsy and dementia.
Fantastic. I'm sure there's a lot of demand for dementia, fact that we know very little. What are you looking for in the brain as far as dementia is concerned? What does nuclear medicine pick up?
The amount of blood supply to the brain is a lot. So when we inject a patient with a radioactive agent, we see a lot of uptake in the brain. In cases of dementia, say Alzheimer's or anything, the amount of blood going to that particular area is reduced. So we're looking at the amount of reduction and to that particular area before we make a diagnosis.
So do you watch this happening live in front of you on a screen, or are they just images that come to you?
They are images, because it takes, for brain images, we don't have to wait 1 hour. We can do it in 30 minutes. And we can, at 30 minutes, an image at 30 minutes will be enough to see whether there is what we call hypometabolism, meaning reduced uptake in that area. It doesn't have to be a dynamic image of something moving, because it's all captured in, is there. It doesn't change.
What about yourself? Are you not concerned about radiation, being exposed to it? Are you exposed at all?
We are exposed, but very, very little.
I'm sitting here with you. I mean, it's not been 20 hours since you last administered anything.
I was not administered anything. I am not radioactive. Far from being a Spider-Man. I'm not. And you are not going to turn into Spider-Woman either.
I hope not. I'll find out soon.
I am not radioactive, but I may be exposed to radiation. But there are principles of protecting ourselves. Okay, what a lot of people don't understand is, they think that we have the highest radioactivity. We don't. Aviation workers, pilots, air hostess, they have way higher radiation exposure than us. I have got less than 1 millisievert per year of exposure. A pilot can get up to about 3 millisieverts. And the highest, can you guess?
No.
Astronauts.
Of course.
10 days in outer space, they can get 4.3 millisieverts. And I don't get that for many, many years. So if you are thinking about whether we are worried about radioactivity or not, no, I'm not.
Okay. Do patients experience panic or even anxiety before or after?
A lot of people, they are worried and they are concerned. But it's always the fear of the unknown. Anything we do not know, we fear. It's like being afraid of the dark. There could be nothing there. But the trick is to explain to the patient what it is that we're going to do. Reassurance always counts. As long as we can reassure the patients, we can explain to the patients the exact the procedure, they are okay. And some patients are still scared. So what I would do is I will take them to the machines. and tell them that, okay, this is what we're going to do. You're going to be lying down here for about 20 minutes after half an hour or 1 hour of uptake time. Mm-hmm. And once they see the machine, and after we explain, more than 90% of the people are not afraid anymore. Of course, there's a small percentage who are still scared, but they are okay after some time.
Okay. And so after 20 hours, you just assume that they are no longer, they are free of any form of radioactivity. Is there a scanner or something to measure and make sure that they are in fact free of it?
We can. But the thing is, knowing the physics of it, the half-life of the agent, we do not assume that they are not radioactive anymore. We know that they cannot be radioactive anymore.
Okay. And is there anybody who will not be a suitable candidate for nuclear medicine? What about people who are breastfeeding, people who are pregnant, you know, that kind of thing?
Okay. As a general rule, those who are pregnant, I would say no. Those who are breastfeeding, under certain circumstances, they can. Like if you're talking about PET CT, FDG, all they need to do is stop breastfeeding for 1 day. They can continue breastfeeding after that. If you're talking about thyroid cancers, iodine 131, they have to stop breastfeeding for that particular child. The next pregnancy, they have no problems.
Okay. What would be your message, Dr. Yogendran, on nuclear medicine?
Currently, every patient is treated in a sort of a multidisciplinary approach. And it's all looking at the benefit of the patient. In nuclear medicine, we look at the structure and function. So it depends on the clinical question in mind. There could be another form of therapy where therapy is concerned. The amount of radiation is very safe. There's a lot of questions by people, but once they know the physics behind it and they understand what we do, they realize that it's safe. We need to create awareness among the fellow medical practitioners, firstly, about the availability of nuclear medicine technology. A lot of doctors, especially, do not know what nuclear medicine can do. So we need to create awareness with that. And with lastly, I would like to say what my ex-boss, Dato' Dr. Subramani, told me when I was working under him in Seremban. He said, do not fear radiation. Respect radiation. Use it wisely to our benefit.
Thank you very much for joining us today. That was Dr. Yogendran Lechumanasamy, a nuclear medicine physician, helping us understand what nuclear medicine is all about. On The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.